You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Our Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things. We talk about that for 50 minutes every afternoon. So, interesting trail of communication, apparently coming from a Mark Levin radio program, now to the tweet of the president regarding this wiretapping question, I suppose, one way of looking at it. We're going to talk about that this afternoon, about where fake news originates and how it gets all twisted around. Also, I'll reflect a little bit. I attended a men's conference this weekend. Honestly, I'm generally not that kind of rah-rah men kind of guy. If you know me, I don't know. I'm more of an artist than an athlete, right? There's that kind of thing. So it's whatever. But a real moving experience this weekend, some really important nuggets of stuff. We'll talk about that. Not that you have to be an athlete to be a man, but I mean, that's kind of, it's usually the rah-rah thing, right? It's like go team kind of thing, you know, that's not my thing. But anyway, we'll get into that. Also want to talk about this transgendered Supreme Court case that didn't go to the Supreme Court because now the Trump administration has made it a non-issue. So interesting when it comes to even court decisions, what we're seeing now with the turning of the tide. We'll talk about that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in just a moment.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Our Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things. We talk about that for 15 minutes every afternoon. So I had a great experience over the weekend. I was invited by a buddy of mine to attend this men's conference. And like I say, generally, I'm not a men's conference kind of guy. I like retreats. I like pilgrimages. I like spiritual times where generally it's more reflective and maybe more contemplative, and you're in this mode of like, okay, we're just gonna kind of maybe hear a little bit, then go and reflect and spend some time in prayer and journaling or whatever. That's kind of my world. So I knew it was gonna step me out. I knew that. You know, this is not my normal thing. Not something I would intentionally seek out. Not a promise keepers kind of guy. Not a, you know, let's high five and hug. But that's what this was. It was a high five and hugging type of an event, and but it was great. I got to admit, it stepped me out of my comfort zone. I met some really great guys. I made some, I hope, new friends, seemingly new friends, which is great. But I think I discovered a couple of things about myself, certainly through this experience, and I think first off, the primary focus of this was this kind of not being internal, but being external, right? I think that was this maximized manhood kind of concept, which is what men are designed to do. But when we're wounded, we will turn in on ourselves, right? We will become isolated. We'll crawl away from the tribe and sulk. And sometimes get so internal, right? We'll get wrapped around within ourselves that we may never fully return, right? We may never fully return, or we may never fully integrate again. And I think this happens. I think it's a very real problem. And you certainly look at the major perpetrators of crime. Generally, it's not women, although it can be in some cases, but rarely, the crime that's committed by men, especially the egregious crime, like those of the Aurora, Colorado theater shooter, or the Littleton, Colorado school shooters, or you name it. The list goes on and on and on. I don't want to glorify that stuff, but we get into this. You generally find a pretty similar pattern, that these are guys who some way, somehow turned in on themselves. And what I have to believe is that it's an internal coping mechanism that then gets misdirected into some sort of false opposition, right? That we assume that because we have been wounded, that everyone is our enemy, you know, that there's an enemy, right? There's an enemy that has to be taken out. Not, yeah, I've been wounded, and I'm going to be on my guard, and I'm not going to let myself necessarily be wounded like that again, but I'm at least going to open up enough that I'm vulnerable again, right? We got to get back to that point of vulnerability. And that comes from the external living of manhood. And so Father Thomas Loy and I talk about this all the time. As we're not breaking new ground by this observation. It is what it is when it comes to men. Men are external, right? I mean, come on. That's how we're designed. That's the difference between men and women. Women are internal. Men are external, right? It's like the cables that we use. This is something from the audio world. We talk about male and female cables. Pretty obvious. Why? Because of the way they fit. So that's part of this dynamic, that men are external. We're very vulnerable in that externality. And even in this in this men's conference, they played a video of the most humiliating crotch shots, you know, is America's funniest video, just guys getting hit between the legs, because it's an external thing and it's vulnerable and this happens, right, to us. No man I know has never had a humiliating, painful, very painful, excruciating crotch shot. This happens. So there's something about being out there that potentially opens us up to pain, right? But one of the things in this conference that I never heard articulated before was basically your extent of leadership is directly proportional to the amount of pain you can withstand. And I thought, that's interesting, right? Because the difference between maturity and immaturity, as it was described in this, is basically the immature will not withstand pain. It will not. Immature individuals seek only pleasure. There is no, I'm going to endure this. I'm gonna move through this in a way that allows me to suffer well, that allows me to have the fortitude, right? I mean, they didn't get into virtue and things of that nature in that sense, but still it was there, and that this is what it's about, right? It's about how do we endure this well? And I spoke with the organizer afterwards. I said, you know, you should read some Pope Francis stuff, because as Archbishop of Buenos Aires, he was very articulate on the matter of the church militant being Christ on the cross. This is the absolute most militant experience ever. This is how we are militant. This is how we model the militants of that, is that we are there willing to endure. We're there even though we want to get the heck out of there. We're willing to endure. It's ingrained as athletes. I don't know how it was ingrained in me. I look back and I'm like, how did I get this ethic? Because I didn't have to, right? But I think I got it because I grew up literally from the time I was 7 years old working on farms. And it wasn't, I was a farmer. My family wasn't a farmer, but my middle sister married a tobacco farmer, and I just migrated into work with him. Like, I was always there on the farm, always working. And I saw this ethic that said, you don't stop. Now, my dad had a very solid work ethic. He would work a 9 to 5 and then come home and generally work until dark, whatever, in the yard, working on projects, you know, gardening, you name it, working on the cars. I mean, always fixing something, always working on something. And I know that I have a lot of that. And at the same time, this farm work was, you didn't stop, right? You didn't take a day off. You didn't take a sick day. You just went out and you did what you did. It wasn't like, oh, so-and-so's not in today. No, you were there. You just did it. And you pushed through regardless of how hard it was. You just did it. You had a task to do. Yeah, we got to fill this barn, right? We've got to cut this field of tobacco. We got to plant this field of tobacco. And I'm working backwards in the tobacco world. But still, that's kind of what you did. You just did it. The day was full of work. You didn't stop. Yeah, you might take a breather here and there and grab some water and you'd eat a lunch, but you're right back to work, hard, busting it work, which I know strengthened me. I know that. There's no question about the fact that that ethic of not stopping, of just having this, it's got to get done. And in some cases, the harder you work, the more you get paid. Right. I mean, I learned that very young that, hey, if you get good at cutting tobacco, you're paid by the stick. You're not paid by the hour. So that means you crank out 1,000 sticks a day, you make $100, which for 1980-ish money, especially then, was a chunk of cash to have in your pocket to go, wow, there's a whole heck of a lot I can do with this, right? In a day, you can make $100 in a day. That was unheard of for... You can do it in fast food. You're lucky to make that in a week, if that. I mean, just go out and bust it in a tobacco field, and you're rewarded. So knowing that I could endure this, and never thinking it was a preparation for leadership, but simply just, hey, you're just going to get out there, and you just got to get it done. There's no question, right? There's no alternative. There's no not doing it. You just do it. But I love that concept that came from this, that there's something directly proportionate to the amount of pain that we are willing to endure. There's maturity in enduring pain. There's immaturity in escaping pain. And I think that, unfortunately, that's kind of where we are in our... I think if there's maybe one of the biggest challenges that we face is that many of us just want to escape pain. And we're never taught to endure it. We never had that ethic built into us that says, no, you suffer with this. You suffer through this. You embrace this in a way that says, we are in this to win this, and there's no question about where we're going to go with this. And, you know, I don't know. My guess is that fathers don't necessarily instill that into their sons. I don't know. And I know I'm not a perfect father. I know I make a lot of mistakes. I know I fall short. I know that my 9-year-old has behavioral issues, struggles with obedience. I get it. But the one thing that I want him to see is me enduring the tough stuff and not simply looking for a way out and not simply saying, this is how we circumvent the system or this is how we get around this. No, this is how we push through this to get to the other side. And I know as a 9-year-old, you don't necessarily get that. And I didn't get that in my dad for years after that age, but still a very powerful experience with this. And it's the Christian Men's Network. If you want to find out more about it. Back in a moment, I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events. Catholic Things, we do that every afternoon, 50 minutes. Thank you. So apparently testing out the new unlike button. We've heard this so many times. How many times have you come on us? I wish it was an unlike, right? Now I'm going, do I really want an unlike? Do I want somebody who doesn't like what I'm saying? I know it. Believe me. I'm painfully aware of those who don't like what I say. I get it. Don't know that I need any more of that to be that much more obvious. But regardless, being tested in the new Messenger app, apparently. So not sure how that works across the whole platform of Facebook, but time will tell. So speaking of Facebook, I think a place where a lot of politics are aired, a lot of attitudes are revealed. I'm accused frequently of being harsh in my tone. I think that what I judge I'm called to do is be like Christ, which is comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable, right? I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that where I feel and judge and sense it's necessary. What I will not do is comfort the comfortable when the comfortable are in some way, as I see it, opposing human dignity with some real infraction and then disguising it as something else. I'm not going to do that. While at the same time, those who are afflicted and are oppositional to the church because of their affliction, I'm going to be incredibly accommodating to them. Because, see, generally what we do is we want to accommodate those who are friendly to us, and we want to disqualify those, exclude those who we judge have no business being in our ranks anyway. We'll shun and exclude them. You know, I heard a beautiful homily years ago from the unfortunately disgraced, and I say that in all sincerity, the unfortunately disgraced Father Francis Mary of EWTN, who found himself in a relationship with a divorced woman and ended up impregnating this woman, leaving the priesthood to be with her, but disgraced because of all of this, which, again, unfortunately, I think it left a mark on him and haven't kept up with him, but I think that there's been continuing challenges in his life, unfortunately. But the one thing he said in a homily, which I loved, he said, I'm a recovering narcissist, he said. And he's like, we see people with this narcissistic attitude, and the first thing we want to do is shun them. We want to push them far, far away because they seem to be so full of themselves and they seem to be so oppositional to everyone that we would just prefer to stay away from them. When he said the exact opposite is what we need to do, we need to find a way to embrace them and pull them in, encounter them in a way that shows them what their true self-worth is, not this facade. Show them their real, real worth. And through that, with that, find a way to then say, this is the path I'm on. This is where I'm headed. If you could join me in this and we could find a way to work together, then great. We've discovered something about each other and we know that there's common ground here, so let's walk that ground together, right? So we don't do that. We don't do that with anyone, much less the narcissistic. But as Father Francis Mary intimated, this is the very key to changing this whole dynamic, right? Because we've got those that are on our team who may not really, they're wearing our jersey, okay? But they may not be on our team, right? They're wearing the jersey, but they may not be on the team. So what we always have to do is find a way to step into those areas of questioning what needs to be questioned. And in with those who are most oppositional, I think it's time that we reach out in ways to say, hey, you know, let's affirm some of that. Those who are wearing the jersey, but maybe not on the team, they're already kind of affirmed and wearing the jersey. Those who would think they never wear the jersey, well, we got to talk to them. We got to find a way to engage them and find a way to bring them closer. So all of this to say, like, unlike, social media, whatever, there's opportunity. There's opportunity to dig in and hopefully really encounter and engage. So with that, talking about this post I put on my Facebook page regarding Kellyanne Conway's recent barrage of attacks that have nothing to do with substance, but only to do with her, in crazy things like the feet on the couch, crazy things like what she wears, crazy things like being being a woman in this environment and being compared to the Wicked Witch of the West, right? These are things that have happened in Facebook memes and posts, and this is not productive. This is not any way to move this conversation further. It is mere sexism disguised as some sort of I'm on the right side of politics, and that's just as wrong. I don't think that you get a free pass because you happen to be on one side of the fence or the other. That's not how this works. It's certainly not for me. Certainly not as an independent and one who is, as you know, focal point beyond all focal points, human dignity. There is nothing dignified about that. Now, you can question. You're certainly welcome to question the authenticity of a position that seems to say, I'm okay with somebody's facts that happen to be different, and we'll just call them alternative facts. That's a question worth asking. That has nothing to do with her as a woman. That has nothing to do to say that she's a witch or worse, right? We're not doing that. We're not doing that by asking that question. You know, I saw people comparing her to Woody Woodpecker because of the way she was dressed at the inauguration. I don't care what she wears. I don't care. Wear a clown suit. I don't care. But let's look at the authenticity of the issues. Let's look at this with real honesty, with real integrity, and now we can go somewhere. Now it's not about character assassination, defamation. It's not ad hominem. We're not going after her as a person and saying there's something deficient about her. We're not doing that. We can ask questions. We can ask questions about this administration without attacking the person of Donald Trump. I can even, as I have, I can ask in all honesty, is he the most honest individual? I have to question that. I still question that. I said I liked his speech to the joint session of Congress. That doesn't mean that I'm 100% on board with everything that he's presenting and doing. We'll talk about that more in the next segment. But when you have someone in a position of authority who happens to be a woman, and we have issues with women already, questions about their equality in the workplace, questions about their being taken for granted or being taken seriously, and a lot of questions that we ask about this dynamic, and it looks like we're only making it worse, because we are only making it worse. It doesn't just look that way. We are only making it worse when we present this as an issue with a woman. So I would hope those that have opposition, I would hope those that are on the other side of the political fence will kind of look in the mirror a little bit on this and say, wait a minute. Okay, we're supposed to be the party of whatever, the little guy, the fairness, the, you know, not being sexist. We're supposed to be the ones who take an honest look at these things. How do we do this? How do we do this in a way that really gives us a leg to stand on? Because if all you're doing is using the same tactics as your quote-unquote enemy, you're being just like them, right? You've got to rise above that. It cannot be something that just degrades the dynamic down to that level. And if we're making cheap shots, you know, if we're taking cheap shots against someone like comparisons to the Wicked Witch of the West, or just asking why is she wearing that, there's no real issue there. We're not getting to the heart of this matter, and we're not getting any closer to dialogue, which is important. Let's not just get close to dialogue, let's have dialogue, right? Let's actually discuss this in a meaningful way that could perhaps open up opportunities for us to see something here together. You know, if I start hearing conversations about healing, if I start hearing conversations about true problem solving, I'm going to appreciate that, right? I'm going to hear that and say, thank you. This is what we needed to hear. I wanted to hear these discussions. We need to have these conversations. We need to find a way to bring our country together in ways that really looks like something we've never seen before. There's always been talk. But let's look at how does this work? How do we pull the poles to the center? How do we get in the middle on this and together meet in the middle and find solutions for one another? When we start having those kind of conversations, which we should, instead of just attacking someone, Kellyanne, I hear what you're saying, but how do we meet on this, right? How do we find a way to meet on this? Now we're talking about real opportunity. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things. We do that for 50 minutes every afternoon. Well, an interesting weekend when we saw this tweet storm show up from the president regarding the questions around the wiretapping, apparently, that is the question from the Obama administration. And so this is what I find interesting. We got a president who is hypercritical of media because he's convinced that media is always lying, but yet stands on the media report from Fox News, apparently, regarding Sweden, right? And this is where he mentions, in Sweden, right? Which goes crazy. There's yet to be a dot connected, but there was violence in Sweden after that, and I think in direct correlation to him drawing it out. That's what I think. But anyway, that's conjecture. I realize that. But I do believe that there's something about this picking and choosing, which I've said all the time. It's not that Donald Trump hates the media. He just hates certain media. Because now he saw something on Breitbart, which apparently lit his fire into saying, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening. Obama tapped my phones. Which, as I understand, if they look at the article, I think it was the New York Times article on my Facebook page, this seems to be connected back to Mark Levin. Or Levin, or however you say his name. Levin, Mark Levin. I don't listen to him. I know him. I know he's got one of the most interesting voices in all of radio. I think second only to Clark Howard, right? If you know these guys. It's what you say, not how you say it. It's not the old days of the golden throats of radio, right? That's how you had to say everything back in the 70s. But that's not how it is anymore. Well, hopefully, right? It's content. But the content of Levin's deal was that this had happened. Apparently it gets, churned through the media cycles to the point of landing on Breitbart when President Trump sees it and then does what any responsible individual would do, researches it thoroughly, checks with advisors, goes through this whole process of saying, are we at the bottom of this? Is this real, right? That's what, of course, just like any responsible individual, make sure that it's all on the up and up. He goes immediately to Twitter and fires off tweets, right? Even with words misspelled. But We don't know. I mean, now we're hearing from the former director of security, the intelligence director. I don't know the exact department, who is saying, no, this did not happen. I would have known about it, and there was no reason for it to have happened. Therefore, why would we have done this? But when we go down this path of political conspiracy theories that really are not researched, but seem to be another extreme example of left versus right, us versus them. And when your audience numbers are based on the salaciousness of your content, I mean, we're at a point now where we have a very extreme contingent in media, both right and left, but I think the most energizing, right? The base that has the most energy seems to be that of the extreme right. Because this is where this angst just kind of gets going. And apparently there was some sort of protest, student protest at Berkeley with a Trump supporter getting beaten. I've got to dig that one up. It just came to mind as I was talking here. But I know there's extremities in both directions. I get that. Not saying that's not the case. But I am saying that there's something about, and certainly seemingly something about, this type of extreme right position that kind of just goes off the rails before we know it. And now I'm sure, without question, there are those who just had a little more fuel on the fire. Do we need to have additional fuel on the fire for past president? This guy's out of office. I understand a sitting president who's doing questionable and dubious things. We need to get to the bottom of that because he's leading our country. Obama is not. So do we need to pull? I mean, here's the question. If this happened, does it matter now? Does it really matter now? Because Trump is president. He's saying there's no connection to Russia. What's he got to worry about? He's got nothing to hide. He hasn't talked to Russia in years, as he says. When was it? 2013, at least, when he did the Miss Universe pageant there. So let's take him at his word. He's got nothing to hide, nothing to worry about. Why is this an issue? Why even mention it? It doesn't discredit your political opponent. He's not your political opponent. He's a non-issue. He doesn't even exist anymore. He's a former president. He's on to book deals and speaking engagements, and he's doing that thing. Are you trying to take that from him? Because what are you doing here? What is the real motive behind what you're doing? Is it to protect yourself? Is it self-preservation? Is it because I'm mad, I'm just going to do this? I know those emotions. I know those emotions. But read a little bit about what Abraham Lincoln would do, who is not the most cool-headed guy. He was not. He was aggressive. I mean, my goodness, this got him where he was as the most loved and most hated at the time president ever, because he was leading a divided country, really divided, way more divided than now, killing each other at war divided. We forget about that. But he would write these blistering critiques of his opponents. Some his proponents, some that were in his cabinet or his generals even, whomever, McClellan, you name it. He would write these blistering critiques. And he would write them, and he would destroy them. Because he at least got it out of his system in the way that if he really told them what he felt, this is how he would approach it. But he would write it, kind of journal it, get it out as though it was a letter to them, and then destroy that letter, and they would never see the light of day. But at least he dealt with his emotions on the issue. There's maturity there. There's decorum. I'm not the best at that. I will admit there are times I've typed a Facebook post only to delete it. I promise you that. Been plenty of responses, right? Plenty of times I've seen something that has stirred my angst to the point of firing off a response that I promptly deleted before I sent it. And then there's a lot of stuff that I just journal about. Again, just in journals. I'm just working through it in my own thoughts and getting it down to read and review it to kind of go, okay, is this sensible? Am I on track here or not? There's a lot of that that I have to do. But I don't just generally fire off responses without some sort of thought, right? Unprocessed, maybe, I guess, is what I'm trying to think of. I try to process that stuff. So where this goes, who knows? But something bizarre is happening now. I think it's clear. Either there's some truth here, and we got to figure out what the heck is that truth. There's no truth. Or we got a president who's kind of a little bit impetuous. Maybe? Maybe. Speaking of the president's influence, obviously influencing the transgendered issue, there was a Supreme Court decision that could have been heard from a lower court regarding the usage of bathrooms, but now apparently it's a non-issue because of the recent approach from the president and whether or not we're going to have this new justice, conservative justice, suggested, appointed from Trump on the court or not. That hasn't happened yet. But at the same time, the court in its split conservative-liberal said, we're not going to hear it. So just not enough, right? I mean, it could have been a two-way, a tie, but not enough to say we're going to hear it. They're not heard, and this is not heard. So the transgendered issue not being heard. But I think it's going to come down to another question. You know, if somebody is obviously, physically, nowhere remotely resembling their natural gender, do you really want them in the opposite bathroom, right? I mean, think about it. It's, as I've said many times, it's not cool anyway. It's a bizarre torture chamber of putting people in there to have to stand shoulder to shoulder. Men, we know this. Women, you don't necessarily do this. But do you want to stand shoulder to shoulder with a mostly woman-looking person standing at the urinal because they still have male parts? I don't know that that's even sensible when they could be in a stall in a women's room walking in and out with no detection. Does that matter? I mean, really, does that matter? There's no indication that they're predators. Are there any greater incidents of predation? That happens with people who look like the gender that they are. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.